This is RSBNB Update, episode 617, recorded Thursday, May 4th, 2017, Shattered Expectations. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSBNB Update, first episode of May coming at you right now. As I promised this week, we would be introducing our new co-host for the month of May, and I have managed to keep this one under wraps, unlike the previous couple, which were revealed prematurely. So before we get too far along the way, I'll just slowly build up to this, and I'll say that the current co-host has been on RSBNB Update before. He's accomplished numerous things in-game, most notably the Elven Sniper Suit as one of his prime achievements that he likes to talk about. He's also an Informer writer, and if that doesn't answer who we're looking at here for the month of May, I am pleased to reveal that the co-host of RSBNB Update joining me this May is Tanis. Welcome.
Hi, Shane. Thanks. Hi, everybody. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I bet you never thought you'd be here, right?
No.
It's like the corporal who has everyone above him killed in the war, and then you're the last one alive. But
it's very surreal coming, because I've been listening for a long time, well before I ever started writing for Informer. So it's very surreal.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that we are, underestimated for, is that, there are always opportunities here. So if you are interested in being a part of RSBNB Update, you can do that. If you want to, write for RSBNB Informer, send us a proposal of something you'd like to write about in RuneScape. If you would like to help produce RSBNB Update, I'm actually looking for someone who watches the RuneScape live streams to produce content on that, anything relevant, any relevant tidbits from that, and so on and so forth. So always lots of great things to do around here at RSBNB, but we're going to go through the month of May, and we normally ease ourselves in by having a patch week or something along the lines of that before the main event, but JX opened up this month with the main event, and that is the Shattered Worlds PvE experience. So, you guys might recall that Shattered Worlds was first announced, I believe it was last summer. Does that sound right to you?
I think so. Well, I almost wanted to say it was at the last, not the last RuneFest, but RuneFest before then. During one of Mod Mark's.
No, it was the Summer Summit.
Yes, you're right. God, that was
last.
That reminded me so much of, yep, you're right. Okay.
And, it was announced, and we were assumed it was going to come out in the fall or maybe even the summer. But Jagex ultimately did say that, no, we're not bringing it out at this time. It needs a lot of work, and we're going to be reworking what we initially thought about this piece of content. And here we are in May of 2017 with Shattered Worlds, which I think is a very interesting piece of content. If you remove the rewards from it, I think you would have something that is, I don't want to say revolutionary, but it's kind of akin to Dominion Tower, wouldn't you say?
Yes. That's exactly right. It's a lot of content. There's a lot to talk about with this update. And it's so multifaceted that there are some things that are just wonderful, that they really hit out of the park, and then there are some things that kind of maybe missed the mark. I don't know. We'll see if we agree on that.
Yeah. I think one of the things, just to kind of provide a bit of a rundown of how this works. So this is located in the Lumbridge Swamp, And there's these two huge portals, which basically take you to areas that the Abyss has penetrated. Because the lore behind this is that each and every time you use a teleport in RuneScape, you penetrate the Abyss. And over time, that allows various anima from different worlds to seep into these abyssal planes. And through doing that, you end up with these PvE critters that aren't necessarily the true PvE critters, like they're called maligned or misformed, for example. And they're on each of the different stages that you might encounter. And your job with Shattered Worlds is to clear each of these worlds from these maligned PvE NPCs. So it is through and through a PvE experience that gets harder as you progress along the way. I just want to talk a bit about the lore before we move in too much on the mechanics. Did you enjoy the idea behind it that our teleporting has kind of weakened the abyssal plane and has allowed anima to seep in, causing these abominations to appear?
I actually really did, and I believe we've experienced that either, was it in Quest? But I remember coming across that aspect before in the lore of how you go to the Abyss as you're teleporting. Yeah. It's just a split thing. So I thought that was a really great tie-in. The other tie-in that I really like what they've done with this is, we have to mention that it's the Abyssal Knights. So this is like the Void Knights joining with the Temple Knights and kind of coming together to make this Abyssal Knight Order. And I thought this was really cool. Now, I think it's a bit of a missed opportunity because you could have had a really cool quest with this.
I'd like the lore. Orange bottle quest.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I think that at some point, Jagex has asked themselves, do we want to, continually bring out quests with this kind of content, or should we just put the content out? Because, you know, albeitly, a quest for this would have either been a mini quest or it would have been a short to medium range bottle quest. And, you know, I have nothing wrong with quests, and I very much enjoy questing. So I would have been happy if they did that, but I think at the same time, that would have put a barrier to this that Jagex probably didn't want. Because I think the number one reason to have this around, aside from, you know, the lore perspective or maybe even the reward perspective, if you want to talk about that, which we'll of course get to later, is that you only need level 40 combat or some level 40 combat skill to begin this. So recall how long it takes to get to a level 40 combat skill. Not long at all. So basically this means that someone who is just starting out RuneScape, who is interested in, you know, what the combat experience is at higher level Slayer might look like, can ultimately head over to Shattered Worlds. Now you're asking yourself, how is this possible? Well, JX offered a very good option here of when you start Shattered Worlds, it lets you have equipment that is tailored to your level up to a maximum of tier 60. So that means if you're level 40, it will give you tier 40 equipment that you can use in Shattered Worlds all the way up to level 60. It'll even provide food for you. So that's a very interesting aspect of it, I think. And that says a lot about how they're aiming this update.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty insightful on their part. And you're right, it doesn't take long. You know, just for example, I have three friends that started Iron Man on Friday night. They were playing Shattered Worlds yesterday.
There you go.
I mean, that's, you know, it really doesn't take very long. And that's something we might want to mention that later. But Iron Man can play this. The location, I thought, was rather unique. Because, you know,
let's talk about that for a minute. It's on the southern tip of the Lumbridge Swamp.
Right, but it's in a free-to-play area where if a free-to-play member can have access to the area but can't play the game, that seems like an odd choice to me.
Okay. So it's in a free-to-play area, but free-to-play can't play the game. That's,
yeah,
you know, that kind of goes against what we saw initially as free-to-play, because free-to-play was wanting to be, you know, a lesser experience of RuneScape. Not that you necessarily need to upgrade to members. Granted, you don't, but this is a, you know, a headlining piece of content that's right there, and it's, I see where you're going with this, that it could be very tempting to try and get someone to upgrade to members for it.
Well, exactly. And if you didn't want to give them the full experience, okay, because we're used to that. Like, when we, you know, I don't know. I mean, I didn't do free to play very long. I mean, literally like a few days, but it was enough to get a taste. And I'm like, oh, I want to do summoning, or I want to do, you know, I was able to play enough that it really made me want to play more. You could have given people, you know what, the first 10 worlds, they could have went up to 10, or they could have went up to 15. And the reason I say that is because not only is this like a good kind of get a feel for Slayer and stuff like that, but this shows off NXT like no content yep. they've came out with yep. yet.
Also the combat and, system.
Yes. It does so much to really illustrate the capabilities and where we can go from here that get these players in here and get them hooked. Like, I really feel like you missed an opportunity.
That is exactly what I was thinking when I first tried Shattered Worlds. I was thinking, okay, this is, you know, some of the most beautiful content that Jagex has ever designed. And it's also showing off the combat system really well as for, you know, enabling someone to start low and then work their way up. So that is excellent. And the fact it just looks so beautiful is also excellent. I also love the way that it's just framed. Like, the story behind it is perfect, I think. I think they did a really good job with that, and, you know, they could have done more questing on it, but maybe that might be a subject for a future bottle quest. Who knows? I'm not going to dock too many points for that, because it's all a question of development time and resource allocation. So, on the core of it, I think Shattered Worlds as a piece of content is pretty good. It's implemented pretty good. There's no bugs. There's no major oversights. You know, I think it also serves a purpose that we'll get to later, but that is, of course, Slayer masks, because you can now purchase all the Slayer masks that were initially on Treasure Hunter from the Shattered World store. So, I mean, I don't know if you guys are seeing this as we're talking about it, but it's certainly starting to feel like that this is the direction that Jagex was wanting to build with Shattered Worlds. Now, are there any downsides that you can see here on Shattered Worlds aside from the inevitable ones we'll get to later?
You know, other than I'm sure we're going to go for some balancing and things like that, you know, a little later, but as for the content itself, I think it's really good. Now, I will always say this. I would much rather wait for something to come out and be done right than have it rushed. Like,
absolutely.
And I think I think they did that with this. I think, you know, it was delayed, and I'm cool with that because I'm much happier with the result with what we have versus what we could have had. Would I have liked, you know, maybe there to been, I don't know, two or three more developers on it so that we would have had a little bit more variety in the landscapes and stuff? Sure. I mean, who wouldn't want that?
And, you know, that could come with a future expansion to it.
Exactly. And, you know, where it sits now, it's cool. And I like how it's now this is like the arc in the way that it, these are procedural, is that correct?
Yes. Yes, they are.
And I think that's, you know, just another cool aspect of it, where they're learning from previous content and they're really incorporating the whole game. So it's feeling more tied together now when they put something out. There's a lot more tie-ins with the game as a whole. So I don't really see any downsides other than some of the scaling and some of the balancing.
Yeah. And, you know, before we get onto that, a very interesting part of this is that every 5 worlds, you are able to bank and choose rewards if you want to leave. You can get rewards. But of course, if you continue on, you get more rewards. So there's that aspect to it as well. Now, when it comes to balancing, they did end up slipstreaming a patch in where that all the critters in Shattered Worlds are ultimately going to become weak against the combat type that you are using. So it's not handicapping you for choosing melee over magic or ranged. And the idea behind this, I think, is to basically fulfill the modern combat triangle that everything needs to be equal. And if you want to use ranged, you can do that without feeling penalized.
Yeah, and if the penalties come, they're going to come through the mutators, which, you know, there are mutators for standing still. There are mutators for running around. So
that's right. I mean, and that's actually something else that we should talk about before balancing is that at the end of each stage, you're able to choose a mutator, positive or negative, depending on what you're given.
Yeah, that's correct. And I believe there are, what's it? Is it eight, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's eight different ones. Some of them are really cool. And some of them are really bad. They're really
annoying.
Yeah,
I didn't get too many of the bad ones. But what did you see for bad ones?
Catastrophe is pretty terrible. If you, I don't know why you would pick that, but if you do, good luck, because it's an evil Dave, I think, and he just lowers your stats continually.
Oh boy.
He's evil. Like it's not fun.
There's another one where you will consistently take damage and have your stats reduced.
Mm-hmm. And then there is the floor is lava. Well, I don't know what the name of it is, but like as you move, you take some damage.
Yeah, that one. I don't remember the name of it either.
I can't remember the name of it.
There's also a positive one where when you kill things, it gives you extra anima.
Yes, that one. That one's blood money. Right. I always pick blood money.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Yeah, me too. And of course, that leads to anima, which we didn't mention, which is of course the currency that you use for purchasing everything. And after you end up clearing a floor, which requires you to kill 75% of its enemies, at least in the early ones, does that change later on?
I'm not sure because I've only made it to 40 so far.
Okay.
One thing with
max
this
is,
well, I mean, it can technically go up to 4,000. At least that's what they said in the stream. They don't expect anyone to be over 150. We'll see what happens. Because it's astronomical, the scale of this thing once you get into those higher levels, but it's not quick. Like,
right, and I think that is going to be our first negative point here. By the way, it's called static. The longer you stand still, the more damage you take.
There we go.
Zombie apocalypse, of course, can summon, and they call it a terrifying undead brood, which is a zombie, and then there's the evil Bob one as well, which is rather comical. So,
yeah,
which feasts on your summoning points and prayer points. So, those of you guys watching along on the YouTube version of the show will see I got my playthrough of Shattered Worlds going through here. And using level 60 equipment, I was pretty much one-hitting everything up to this point here. And 13 minutes in, I'm on World 7. So, for someone who is max combat, you basically got to spend a good half hour or maybe a little bit more one-hitting things that are pretty much, boring fights for us who have high level combat to get to the point where it becomes interesting. So I think that's going to be the first negative here is that it takes so long to get started. And I wish there was a way to kind of fast track this, to skip past these parts for those of us who have the ability to one hit, all of these creatures.
Well, there is in a way, I was never able to do it because anybody that knows me knows the one thing I am not is fast. I can do a lot of stuff, but it ain't going to be quick. So you can actually skip worlds if you clear a world fast enough, but I was never able to do it. Was you able to do it, Shane?
I didn't notice that, so maybe I was clicking too slow.
Okay. Yeah, technically, well, at least this is what they described in the stream that I think was, it was the end of last week, I think. It was a Shattered World stream. And they did say that if you clear a world fast enough, you can skip the next world. This was supposed to balance this part of it out, but like I said, it never happened for me. I'm not quick though, so I don't know if it's how accessible that is for other people that may be a little more proficient in combat.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess that's there, but and you know, there's no marker point on the bar saying how quick it needs to be finished in order for you to accomplish that, which I think would have been a good thing to throw in, because you want updates like these to be smart and, you know, easy to use when it comes down to it, because if they're not, then you don't know this is a mechanic and you're not able to strive for it.
Exactly. So. And they added so many other little cool metric features, you know. I mean, there was like, not like rune metrics, but if you notice, like when you finish, it tells you, you know, your max hit and the max hit you were hit
right by.
And, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of little cool stuff like that. So you wouldn't have thought it would have been a stretch for them to tell us, give us, you know, the timer on there.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that with that, now that you mention it, that ties into one of the core mechanics of this update. And that is that this is designed to be a PvE testing ground to test how good you are at combat.
Yes.
That's as simple as it is. And, you know, if you're there for the rewards or not, well, I mean, at least you can take solace in the fact that you're going to be able to, in a way, see how hard of an opponent you can take on. And if you have room metrics and you want the further data, you can see how much DPS you did against that creature. So, you know, I am, through discussion, learning things about Shattered Worlds that I didn't think about beforehand that are starting to make more sense to me as to why this is a game update here. Because I think the number one thing that lots of people said as soon as they tried this is that, oh, the rewards aren't worth it, and there's no reason for me to do this because I need to take in my level 80 armor that degrades and costs me money to use, whereas the rewards I get out of it are not worth me doing that. And that's the number one complaint that I've heard personally, is that people don't want to spend their money on their, you know, divine energy packs or repairing their armor in order to play this update, whereas you can only get so far with tier 60 equipment.
And the major criticism I heard is along the same lines. I've heard people talk about just how, so if you can make it to world, I think it's if you make it to around 100, 105, somewhere like that, you should have enough anima to be able to buy your first ability. But after that, you're in for a real grind, because as you're going up the first time, you're getting bonuses. You get a bonus for clearing a world. You don't get that when you go through the second time. So when you complete a world again over, you don't get that bonus. So this can be really grindy. And I haven't heard people talking about the repair cost for their equipment, but just the pure time cost of trying to get that when they don't feel the rewards are very worthwhile.
Yeah, that gets amortized in, I think.
Yeah, and see, and I'm not really sure because I mean, can we really say that they're not worth it? I mean, we don't know what these abilities, what their potential is. There's some really cool stuff.
Right.
And the way that, I mean, you know how our elite PVM community is. They're going to come up with some crazy uses for these new abilities.
Yeah, well, let's just talk about the abilities right now then.
Okay.
So there's two of them. One is ranged and one is attack. And the attack one is a basic ability requiring level 65 attack. It's called Bladed Dive. You leap towards the target location or enemy, and if an enemy is targeted, you'll deal damage to it and all adjacent enemies upon arrival. If enemies hit by Bladed Dive die within 3 seconds, Bladed Dive's cooldown is reset. Note that Bladed Dive does not share a cooldown with Barge, Escape, or Surge. So basically what this means is that if you are using this as a finishing strike, you're going to be able to reset its cooldown right away and use it again. Now, if you're thinking of using this against, you know, high-level Slayer creatures who are there and, you know, you might not be able to finish them with that, I don't think that's the point of this ability. I think the point of this ability is to speed up Slayer training, because if you think about it, we only have one or two dual-wielding AoE abilities, one attack and one strength. And ask yourself, what is the point of that, right? We only have one or two AoE abilities right now for melee. So this is the third one right there.
Yes. Well, in this, I think, I don't know if it's an oxymoron, but it adds range to melee, which is unique. And I can think of a few times that that would come in handy. You know, there are times when you're going through a Slayer mob that the next, you know, monster is too many squares away. You can't hit it. But with Blade of Dive, you could, which I think is really pretty cool. I'm looking forward to trying that ability out.
And, you know, I think if anything, the thing to take away from this is the fact that now we have what is looking like it's going to be a great addition to the melee ability set for AoE. Because if you think about it, magic already has the ancient magic spells, and ranged has some pretty good AoE abilities as well. So,
yes. Oh, and you can use this, too, as a type of a surge or a... the range one where you back away. If you click on the map itself, you'll just jump there. Is that correct?
Yeah, because you don't need a target.
Right. So, I mean, there's people are going to find some really cool uses for this. I think this is going to be in a lot of action bars. You know, a lot of melee-based bars are going to have this.
Yeah. And like you said, you're going to need to get around level 100 or so in order to be able to unlock this. And I think this is the one that people are going to go for first.
Yeah. Now the second ability, that
Salt
sounds really
wound.
Cool too.
Salt the wound.
Uh-huh.
Deals 188% weapon damage to the target plus an additional 18% of weapon damage per stack of punctured on the target. And this also refreshes the duration of punctured. Now you'll remember punctured is another ability, and I think this one is one that we get for free, if I recall. Let me just recall that right now. Did you ever use punctured?
I don't know. I don't know if that's on my range bar or not.
No, because I think it's very interesting that they brought this in to this and having it tie in with the ability that's already there.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too, and especially because it changes that ability permanently. Like, it can't go back. So there was a question during the live stream about what about next? Like, what's this going to do in that situation? And they had actually thought about that and said, you know, it's not going to heal her during blood. So that's cool, but I thought, you know, good on the person for asking the question, and good on Jagex for actually having the foresight to see it. I have to patch it 2 weeks later, you know?
Yeah, okay. So, Mutated Dazing Shot is a basic ranged ability, and that, of course, also comes from Shattered Worlds here. So, 63,000, or 63 million Shattered Anima from the minigame, and requires level 60 ranged is how much this one costs. So, Oh, also upgrades your Dazing Shot. Sorry, Dazing Shot. I see right there. So it's Dazing Shot that it upgrades, not Punctured. Shows how much I do combat.
Punctured is the stacks, right?
Right, Punctured is the stack, and Dazing Shot is the ability.
And now, Can you see the people that do group bosses going for this one probably over Bladed Dive? Because these all stack on top of each other. Like, your whole group, adds up. So, like, I could see people doing that do raids or maybe AOD, you know, any group situation. It's very much like the what is the one, the ability that you get from raids that has stacks? It almost works the same way.
I don't recall.
I can't remember it either. I don't own any of the raids abilities myself. So, is it corruption? Maybe it's a corruption shot. I can't remember.
Yeah, you know, they could definitely, I think, use this in the PvE encounters because, you know, it stacks. It deals damage every 1.8 seconds, so every 3 ticks, and it deals approximately 8 to 10% ability damage over its complete duration. So you can have up to 10 stacks on the target. Now, if you're thinking of how much damage that's going to be doing, well, you can do that amount right there. If you factor this in, that's basically 80 to 100% of ability damage, and also it's a bleed, so it's going to keep happening regardless of what you're doing to the main target. So, you know, I think this one might be the one that you mentioned, is that PVM groups will look at this because, I mean, you can stack them up to 10 times, so, and if the enemy that you're fighting is weak to ranged, I mean, why not?
Well, and think of how fast, you know, in a group of five, think how fast you could get 10 stacks. I mean, it'd be very interesting. I'm eager to see, you know, how people use this and just exactly what they can do with it.
Yeah. So as it sounds like right here, we've got two great rewards that have already come from Shattered Worlds here. So,
and that's just the beginning. We haven't even talked about the pet.
Oh, the pet. The pet. Okay, what is the pet? What's with the pet?
The pet is, it's a nine. Was it a nine stage pet, I believe? So I believe it's, what, 900K for the first stage. And it's like a, it's hard to describe. It's almost like, it's kind of formless in the beginning, and as it goes up in stages, it kind of grows arms and a head and legs and all the way to the end where it's really cool. You know, you get like, I think at the end it's an Animasaurus or something like that. It's kind of like your own little dinosaur. But you know how the pet lovers are. I'm a pet lover. I'm gonna have to have it. It's gonna have to be mine. You know.
You know, I think that this where you purchase each stage is a good example of what they could have done with skilling pets or with skill pets.
I don't know. Just because skill pets are such, you know, it's almost like the flip side of the bossing pets. You know, they, that RNG with them is just, it's just, I don't know. I kind of like the RNG when it comes to that. You know,
I think what they should have done with the skilling pets is that you could purchase the pet and purchase that pet for a certain amount of experience. And you know where I'm going with this? Kind of a way of prestige mode.
Okay, so, I see how you work that in there.
You suck the XP out, and there you go.
Yeah,
whereas this point, you're using Shattered World points. So same kind of idea there. So there's the pet. And as we mentioned, also Slayer Masks, which, you know, if you don't have those and you want to pick one up, you can do that, I guess. And, you know, I think that this, ultimately, if this was the rewards for this, and based on what we said here, that would be okay for Shattered Worlds for a set of rewards. But there's more. There's sigils, which fit into a new equipment slot, oddly. You know, I don't know why Jagex has to do this. I thought we were good enough with the pocket slot, personally. Why, right? Why?
I don't mind there being another, you know, like an offhand pocket slot, whatever. We can use, because, and the reason I say that is something, you know, that could provide future content. Something else could go in there. So that doesn't bother me as much. Some of these sigils do bother me.
Well, which one? There's only three of them.
okay, you'll have to help me here, but there is one that is, it basically rewards terrible behavior. It's a moral hazard, where you get a boost, or it's a boost of XP, right? What you get, what's it, 10 seconds? However
so
many monsters.
So increases Earn Slayer XP by 10% for 30 seconds.
There you go. Now, what is that going to do? You already have problems with people running in, tagging shit, leaving you sitting there. Next thing you know, you're in a freaking argument, and now you give a reward that encourages that? Bad, Jagex. Bad. That was a bad idea. Like, that is just... there's going to be problems from that.
And it lasts for 30 seconds, and it's got a cooldown of 60 seconds.
Yeah. So someone walks in with a pocket full of those. I mean, yeah, the cooldown's 60 seconds, but I mean, it just encourages the kind of gameplay that you don't want people to do. So why would you do that?
You think they do that for 10% XP though?
They do it to do it anyway now, just to be asses.
Okay.
Yeah, they'll definitely do it for sure. Wait till is it the 17th that double XP? Walk
yes.
around on double XP, you will see it. It is going to be dog eat dog this time around on Slayer. Yeah.
All right.
Just going to be nasty.
We also have the Ferocious Sigil, which increases, or rather allows NPCs in Curadel Slayer Dungeon to respawn instantly on death for 30 seconds and cooldown once again 60 seconds. I don't know. I don't know if this is needed. I think that this might be addressing a problem that could be fixed otherwise by adding more Slayer creatures or maybe just increasing the size of Slayer dungeons as they are right now, because it certainly seems like this, if you activate the sigil and okay, so you basically get to, wail on the same Slayer creature regardless after you keep killing it. So I don't know if this seems to solve a problem that exists, but it could have been solved in other ways, maybe. So
yeah, well, it's making us do the work for something that should already be there in the first place.
Yeah,
shouldn't have to wait that long
and
on a respawn.
I mean, there are Slayer creatures that take you more than 30 seconds to kill.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
You will not want to use them for that. And you know what? It's got a 60 second cooldown, so it's up for 60. Down for 30, so it takes a minute and a half for until you can activate it again. So I guess that's fine, but okay. I think there could have been other ways to solve that one. And then finally, the Aggression Sigil immediately forces all nearby monsters to attack you, and the slot goes on cooldown for 20 seconds. We already have aggression potions.
Could say rip bloodweed. Bye.
Yeah, but I think that the point of this is that this one is not going to be focused, and rather, I think that people are going to just stick with the herb and potion, because if you're going to be spending this many points on a Shattered World reward, you might as well just spend points and get the potion, right?
Yeah, that's probably the only saving grace with that.
So
otherwise, yeah, I would guess that, aggression potions would be taking a bit of a dive.
Yeah, and they can't do that. So, okay, so it starts out, you purchase it. It contains 500 charges. To recharge the sigil, you need to talk to the quartermaster and pay 45,000 anima per charge.
Which is quite a bit once you have exhausted your bonuses.
Yep. So, I mean, I think the herbs are going to be the way to go, but that's just me personally, from what I'm best at in game. And to be fair, that is the recharge price of all of these sigils. So, I initially saw the complaints coming from this about the issues that were associated with this update, and that, maybe. The rewards aren't strong enough to get people to keep playing here. But after seeing the costs associated with the sigils, I don't think it's about these sigils, to be fair. Shattered World is not about these three rewards. it could be potentially about the two abilities, I think. It could be about that. But what I do ultimately think it's about is when we get back to the core aspect of what we were discussing in the beginning, it is a way to showcase the combat system and NXT to people who are playing the game and get people interested in combat. Sure, it could be about picking up Slayer Mask that you might have missed or picking up these two great abilities. I think that's what people are definitely going to go for. But at the end of the day, it's not about the rewards. It's more about what Jagex is saying with the environment associated with it. And I forget who said it, but I think one of the people on Informer once said that, you know, RuneScape doesn't always have to be about rewards. It can be about what's actually going on in game at the time and the lore behind it, which is certainly true for quests and stories, but it's been so long since we've had an update that hasn't been so reward focused that people have really begun to expect that reward be about everything on these. So
yeah, I think that's been a transition, I guess, that the community has kind of went through, because it really has turned into this, well, is it worth it or not type of thing.
Yeah.
And we don't experience the content for the content's sake a lot of times. I do want to give props on those Slayer Mask.
Please.
For two reasons. One, I think Jagex is trying to do well when it comes to bringing the stuff that you can technically purchase through Treasure Hunter and giving us ways to earn that through our time and our effort. You know, first they did it with the skilling outfits, now they're doing it with the Slayer Mask. That's really good. That's encouraging. You know, microtransactions ain't going in. They're not going anywhere. They're making way too much of it, and I'm glad they're making them. But this makes it so that it's fair for everybody, that if you don't have the money, maybe you have the time. That's a model you see in, you know, everywhere now. So that's very cool. The other thing with the Slayer Mask, that's a huge deal for Iron Man. It's really good for them. Because Slayer can be a little more tedious when you're playing Iron Man, and especially in the beginning. So those masks can go a really long way.
Yeah.
So good job, Jagex.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think the only thing that Jagex does need to address are perhaps what's going to happen to this update after people get the initial rewards. Because if you think about what I said, that, okay, so let's say you're level 85 plus and you have, you know, level 85 gear that you need to pay for to use. Are we going to be able to use this gear in Shattered Worlds and, you know, not have to pay for it? That would be a good question that I would have, because honestly, I think that you want an update to be used, but if you are making it so it's a deterrent to use it by having the armor cost so much, I think if anything, they should reduce the amount of drain that armor has in here and weapons so that it's not as burdensome on people. Because, I mean, let's face it, you want to go for a combat experience and you want to get something out of it. You're not going to go to Shattered Worlds if it's costing you that much to use your armor. That's simple economics and math, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right about that. And this is an area where, like you had mentioned before, this is something that can be expanded on. So you can expand a reward shop easily. And there's other things that you could really back up. Just think about the equipment. Think about how long ago Void came out, right? With pest control and everything. With the tie into the Void Knights and the Temple Knights and all that, you could have the next level of Void, you know, yep. the Abyssal. And so there's room to do the stuff that
right.
you mentioned.
So you know? I think then if they were to expand the reward shop like that to have the next level of Void and call it Abyssal, then I don't think they would need to have the ability to reduce the amount it costs you to fight here.
Yeah, and they could go, I mean, you know, that could go either way. I'm kind of hoping for the next, I want to see the next Void, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
That would be great.
But we do have the level 80 hybrid armor that came from the Gemstone Dragons. So that did come out recently.
Yeah, I don't think this would be anytime soon.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying there is room for it, and I hope that they do end up going in that direction, because that's a rather unique kind of armor. You know, it's the glass cannon type of approach. So I think it'd be cool to see what the next generation of that would be.
Yeah, and I mean, we also got the level 75 armor from the two world events that you can use as well. So that's hybrid. So I wonder, where would you put Abyssal armor on the spectrum then?
Well, I would probably put it at... One, I probably wouldn't... I would use the Void model, where it has a very generous accuracy bonus. In fact, I would probably give it the best accuracy bonus. But it would be lower defense. So we're talking maybe level 60 defense, because the original Void is 40. So I'd probably put it somewhere around 60. And then I would have some kind of a piece or an augmentable item that could turn it into whichever style you wanted to use.
You know, you hit the nail on the head, because not everything needs to be level 80 plus, I think.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, but at the same time, we also have to look at the time factor. And if they did expand this, the time factor would have to fit within something that someone who is in the level 60 to 70 range could ultimately achieve. So.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, there would be balancing to it, which isn't
right.
always their and strong point.
And I mean, even if they did put out a level 60 hybrid set from this in the future, what they could ultimately do with that is they could ultimately add in piece to make it take it up to level 85. That comes from a boss, right?
Exactly.
Or yeah. from smithing or something. So there's definitely lots of potential with this. And so I think either expand the reward store or decrease the amount of cost it takes to purchase stuff. Or, decrease the amount of cost it costs you on your armor and weapons.
Yep. I think that would be the way for them to go.
Yeah. But overall, there's no mechanical issues with this. And they did do a few hot fixes this week, like I said, for making it so that the creatures inside are weak to your combat type. So once again, focusing on the combat triangle. And, you know, ultimately, I think they did well with this. It's just a question of if people will be playing it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it looks great. I love the... there's so much stuff that looks so good. Like, the first time I saw one of them spiders, I was like, ah, who let a Raxir in here? Holy
right, crap. And there's even miniature Ripper demons that don't kill you on spawn.
I know. Harambe's there. I mean, come on. It's so cool. It looks great, but I think you're right. Will this be something that people play, or will it... You know, will it be dead content? I hope that's not the case.
Yeah, well, it's going to go that way if they don't change the costs associated with doing it, like the armor costs and whatnot, or expand the reward store. So,
yeah. Which would be unfortunate, because it really does show off what NXT can do and what they can do when they really get it together.
And for that reason, I think that the armor cost model would be better than just expanding the reward store to cater to the people who want more rewards.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess you've convinced me there. Yeah, that's true.
Because I'm of the opinion that an update doesn't need the rewards to be good. So, anyways, we're gonna move on right now. There wasn't really anything in the patch notes this week. Nothing to write home about, so we're gonna skip those. But a notification from Jagex that the Jagex account Guardian is going to be deactivating on May 15th, and of course. You will no longer have that protection on your account. Basically, what Jagex Account Guardian was, for anyone who is listening who might not be aware of it, is this was a series of security questions that you would be prompted to answer when logging into your RuneScape account from a new device. Now, you might be asking, why did Jagex do this when we have something called the RuneScape Authenticator? Well, that's because this was before the Authenticator and the Authenticator paradigm became widespread. But today there's no point for something like JAG because that can be social engineered, whereas the RuneScape Authenticator cannot be because it is a one-time key that only you have and it sits within your smartphone. So if you don't have RuneScape Authenticator activated yet, you can set it up. Just go to runescape.com/authenticator. You'll be given information on how to do this. It has applications for Windows Phone, Android, and of course iOS. There's that. But you might be wondering, if you don't have a smartphone, how can you do this? Well, there is actually a way to do it without a smartphone. Providing you have a Windows PC, there's an app called WinAuth. You can basically download it and provide it with the token that JAGX gives you. And then following that, you're going to be able to enter that in with your RuneScape account. And then anytime you want to log into RuneScape, you just open up WinAuth and it will give you a one-time code that you can use. So we did a segment on this before, way back when, on episode 588 of RSBNB Update, where we went through this. It's, you know, literally a two-minute process to do this. So basically, you just go into your RuneScape account and say to enable now for the authenticator, click the setup button if you're wanting to use WinAuth. If you're not using WinAuth, you'll just take a picture of the QR code. So you'll click the can't scan this code thing, and then you'll be given a long alphanumeric string that you just copy and paste into your authenticator application. Click the add it as a Google authenticator, because that's the protocol that's being used here, and then you just paste the code in. Click verify, and then you'll be given a 6-digit code, and then you can use that code, enter it on the RuneScape website, and you will have access to the authenticator for use on your PC with WinAuth. And that is literally all there is to setting up WinAuth and using that as your authenticator. So would highly recommend you do this if you have a smartphone. And if you don't have a smartphone, well, here's the method for you being able to do this. It's called WinAuth. It's a free open source piece of software. And yeah. Free to use, and you just open it up, and there's your code. So, do you use the authenticator?
Oh, yes. Yep. I got that as soon as it came out, and I used the Guardian before then. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Like safe accounts around here.
Yeah. And you know, that's something that I really made sure that we did when it was time to, you know, move everyone over to authenticators. I actually went through the effort of finding WinAuth and, you know, seeing how easy it was to use for this. So I really wish JAGX would make more of a note about how to use this. Let's see. Yes, they do have a guide for WinAuth. Excellent, JAGX. Good job. They do have a guide for WinAuth. That'll be in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Yeah, it teaches you how to use this and goes through the step that I just went through here in video format. So, splendid. Nicely done, nice. JAGX. All right. So, also, this week we have something called the Road to Menaphos. So this is kind of like what they did with the Road to Pryftinus and all the various Elfborn things and whatnot. So Menaphos is coming June 5th, as we mentioned, and they actually went on location to a desert to shoot this. So what did you think of this?
It was cool. You know, I mean, I'd like to know where they went.
Yeah, because, I mean, I was thinking, oh, this might have been somewhere in the desert in the U.S., but there was actually, you know, desert-looking buildings out there from that you would expect to see, which the architecture in the American desert is, of course, American. So I'm guessing that they went to either somewhere, maybe in Morocco, perhaps, because that would be relatively close to the UK. It wouldn't make sense to go somewhere into like the UAE, because that would be a 12-hour flight and probably pretty expensive. So, but on location shoot here with Mont Osborne and others, and they basically go through what we can expect to see in Menaphos, and you know, it's a month away at this point when we're listening to this, and it's going to go quick these few weeks. And basically what we're going to be getting is we're going to be getting a city with four quadrants that split up based on various attributes. At the end of the day, you know, I don't know. What are you thinking about Menaphos?
I think managing expectations for Menaphos is extremely important. And as much as I want the development teams and the QA teams really focusing and making sure it's right, I also want people out there making sure the players know what to expect. This is not Priftinus. It's not Priftinus 2.0. And I'm rather worried that people are not going to realize that. This is not a high-level player hub. It was never meant to be. But I'm a little worried that that's what players have in their heads.
And yeah, well, I mean,
that's what they're going to be expecting.
It is going to be the jumping off point for 120 Slayer. So we do have that going in as well.
Yeah, I mean, it does have that. But I mean, as far as I knew, I mean, it was advertised as more of an intermediate levels players to, you know, what I'm saying is like, this is not going to be the absolute best XP, like Prip is when it comes to, you know, different AFK methods or what have you. Granted, you can get better rates, but that requires more clicking, more effort, more, you know, active. As for AFK methods, a lot of times Prif is the best. Menaphos isn't going to be like that. I think Menaphos is going to be... See, here's another issue, too. Because I had seen this in a live stream where they were talking about not really going all out with what they could have done with NXT, but they pulled back a little bit because of the surrounding area.
Right.
They wanted to look good. And I'm like, no.
But there's also another issue of Java still being the main client in game.
I know. So. What? Just get rid of it. Just cut the cord, man. Just cut the cord. Cut it. I don't know. But why would you do that, Shane? Like, this could be beautiful. And
yeah.
They're holding themselves back.
Yep, they are. And, you know, maybe for that reason, if it come out next year rather than this year, we might have been seeing something different with this. But at the end of the day, I mean, all you got to do is look at various areas in RS. And there was a example of one of these shots here where, okay, so that this could be real life or it could be RuneScape. And I actually thought that while watching the video. And there was another area here where they were in the video that they have recreated in-game, the Central Garden. And, of course, we also have the Central Library with all of its intricate design and whatnot as well. So, I mean, I think you have a fair point with that. But at the same time, it's coming out now, and we have to work with what we got. And there's nothing to preclude these additional features from being programmed in right now and then turned on once Java is removed.
Which, that's a very good point. And I'm, you know, like, I understand it. I just worry about the expectations and how important that can be with this community. And so that's,
you hit the nail on the head, because that is what killed so many updates.
Yeah. And so that's just kind of what I'm a little leery about. I think that Menaphos itself could be great. I'm really looking forward. I love what the ideas they did with the library. I think that's going to be awesome. I think there's so many lore tie-ins. We've been waiting for this for so long. There's so much more to Menaphos than just the things to do there. I think Menaphos has a, you know, Prif was so different. It was cool. I mean, it was that end cap to the story, but Menaphos isn't really the end cap to the desert story. So there's a lot of stuff within it, I think, that we'll be able to find from like a lore perspective. That's going to be really, really cool. But I guess we just have to wait and see how it's implemented, how they do, because it's, like you said, it's coming out. If it's ready or not, it's coming out. So let's hope for the best.
Yeah. And, you know, they're splitting it into, of course, the main pyramid, the port district, which is going to be tied into the Ark and your ports minigame, the Imperial district, the workers district, and the merchants district. And we're also getting another grand exchange with this from what we were told here. So, you know, it's going to be a hub and going to be about the size of a rock. And you're going to be, like you said, it's not going to be about getting the best XP there. It's going to be about getting the XP that you can work on and refine to be good, but not necessarily the best or the most AFK in game, which I think is a smart thing to do because that's the ultimate flip side to Prif, right?
Well, correct. And it's, and, you know, and you got to, you know, people need to realize that Prif is behind a pretty considerable amount of content. There's a lot of quests and some rather proficient levels that you need to have to even get in there. This isn't
locked. You need two quests.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So for me, I think, you know, this is going to be like the intermediate player spot. I just hope the community gets that, you know.
Yeah. And, I mean, that is something that hopefully we can drive home here, too, is that it's not going to be the next Prif. And if you guys are listening to this, make sure you tell your friends that, because we don't want people to be disappointed when this arrives. And, you know, I am liking the fact that, you know, initially when we first heard about this, it appeared as though, oh, 120 Slayer is going to be the core aspect of this. But as it is being fleshed out, 120 Slayer is only a part of it. So there is actually going to be something here for everyone, which is really great.
Yes. Yeah, I think that I feel the same way. There's definitely a lot for the Lorehounds. There's a lot for the intermediate players. And if you are in those higher levels or in that end game, you know, you have the 120 Slayer. So there is something for everyone as long as you know what to expect.
Yep. And of course, that's a month away. So, oh boy.
And it's going to go so fast because look at what we have left to come in May.
Yeah. I mean, it's, very good points. You know. And that's what we got for the next up is the month ahead. Mental Health Awareness Week. They're going to be putting some NPCs in game to explain the aspects of their charities. And they're going to add various challenges to the game that you can do to unlock new cosmetic items or just buy them in the store outright, and all proceeds of this event will go straight to the charities. So that's an interesting take on this year's charitable giving for Jagex. I know we were having a discussion about that, you and I, in February. But
yeah.
Achievement system phase 2 is well on its way. They say they've been compiling feedback and ideas for new achievements, and they're busy looking into which features can be implemented to build on the foundations that were added last month.
I feel, you know, it's almost like they listen to the podcast and read Informer or something like that. Maybe they typed in Google the achievement system and saw we were 4 and 5, right? So that's good news. I'm very pleased that is going to be happening.
Yeah, RuneScape achievement system fixes. Oh, good. We're not on the top anymore. That's good.
Oh, bummer.
That's good. That means that other people have taken up the cause. I'm happy about that.
Hey, we led from the front, though, right?
Yeah.
Say, so come with us.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no. Actually, we still are on the page, except we're about midway down the first page, the Informer article.
Okay. Well, good deal. We're bringing other people on board. Hey, we brought the mods on board, right? That's all that matters.
Hopefully.
Well, you know, anything is an improvement, and that's what I was hoping for, that they just wouldn't, you know, leave it. So that's good.
And, of course, also, as we mentioned last week, Double XP Weekend on May 19th through the 22nd, which is a huge shocker, being only 3 months after the last Double XP Weekend.
How surprised were you when this got revealed?
I mean, it wasn't, nothing surprises me anymore at this stage.
So. Right, you're an old hand at this by this point, yeah. I was shocked. I mean, it was shocking as in I couldn't believe we were getting another double XP week. I'm like, what? At the same time, I totally get it. This is like a last shot for a lot of people to get that 120 Slayer before Menophoth drops. good luck with that, because it's gonna be packed. Sorry.
Yeah, and the new sigils aren't gonna help, are they?
Not that weekend. It's gonna be rough, guys. I'm just I wish everyone the best and hope that they are able to achieve their goals and try to have patience with your fellow players, because it could be a stressful weekend for those of you that will be pursuing Slayer.
Indeed. Alrighty, so we do have a discussion topic this week, and it's from Sirion, of course, so I will read this. Hey there, as you all know, I've been super hyped for this update and its repercussions on the game. I may also be having a few withdrawal symptoms from the podcast, so here are some things for you to consider about Shattered Worlds. Number one, while the rewards for Shattered Worlds don't seem that great, they were given quite some attention in the news post. It seems that they have been used to lure players there, which would counter the idea behind Shattered Worlds that is a competitive social event. Do you think that the rewards for Jagex have been left relatively useless on purpose, or do you think Jagex will buff them to get more players to compete just for content for that? What do you think Jagex should do? Number two, the minimum recommended combat requirement for Shattered Worlds is only level 40 combat, which seems really low. It also means that for high-level players, it scales up fairly slowly, and they have to spend a lot of time getting through the more challenging worlds. This means that the content requires a much higher time investment, up to several hours. We have proof in the form of Fight Caves versus Fight Kiln that things with shorter duration are more popular, and I think that a 30 to 60 minute time investment would have been the sweet spot, with maybe an option to do a very quick challenge or just a few worlds that you can do daily. Three, one of the main concerns from players was the need to invest resources, where they get not much in return. Do you think this is a problem with the player's attitude, or is it the rewards, or should players be not required to invest anything in the event? As for me, the ideal solution would have been to make Shattered Worlds an event playing ground where you automatically get buffed to max levels and can mix and match from a special set of gear only used in this activity, similar to Dungeoneering, but without having to make your own. This would have really put the focus on player skill and strategy, and also take away any concerns of having to spend resources or money at the event. It could also lead to shorter and more interesting challenges, since everybody starts at the max levels, so no scaling is needed. The rewards should mainly be aesthetic and a way to show off skill, maybe with unique rewards for the top X players in the weekly challenge, similar to how collectible card games do it. To end on a lighter note, what is your favorite type of bird? All right. Number one, I think we addressed this earlier, but I think we can just summarize here in that the rewards, I think, were... I don't know if we can say intentionally left blank. I think we both agree that the rewards are underwhelming and that Shattered Worlds itself shouldn't be about the rewards.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I believe they weren't left blank. They were left with room to expand. And they've mentioned other things as well. You know, they mentioned in the stream that, you know, and we know now that it wasn't released with the capability of doing co-op, but they said that can be added rather easily in the future. So there's going to be other things with that. Now, I think Theron has a point when he talks about some of the rewards. That I am actually surprised there wasn't any cosmetic items with this. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That just kind of surprised me, because it seems like we get that with everything. I don't know. I just thought of this. We also can't act like you go in there and you don't get an experience, right?
Right. That's true. You do get experience.
You get experience, and your weapon levels up, invention if it's augmented, your gear levels if it's augmented. You get the regular experience. So, and experience rates are comparable with if you were fighting the stuff on the outside. So let's keep that in mind too when we're talking about our drain rates and stuff like that, because that drain is going to happen no matter what you're fighting, no matter what you're doing. So if you're going for experience, then this is on par with that. If you're going for money, well, and doing bossing, that's a different story.
All right. And, you know, I think we touched on it earlier, but the rewards definitely could have been improved. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I think Jagex, as we said, should either, you know, add more rewards to it. Like some of the rewards Sirion have suggested are good, and some of the rewards you suggested were Tanis were good. And, you know, maybe we don't need that hack on the amount of drain that comes from your equipment, because it is indeed, like you said, you are getting experience for it. So, I don't know. You know, you definitely raised an interesting perspective there that we're getting XP for it, so why shouldn't it drain? So, ultimately, with that, I do think that Jagex does need to find a way to make it so that people will keep coming back to this. And I don't know if it should be in the rewards. I think it should be, like maybe what Sirion said with cosmetics, or just making it a more competitive experience by not making your drain rates matter in there. So,
well, and that could be, or, you know, how about you could implement leaderboards, implement co-op, have co-op leaderboards.
There you go.
You know, there's lots of stuff. You could have Shattered Worlds gear prestiged. What do you think?
Yeah, you go.
There's all kinds of stuff they could do.
You know, another thing I was thinking that they could do is they could, rather than allowing you to purchase a Slayer assignment from Shattered Worlds, like that is one of the rewards. You can purchase a Slayer assignment of Shattered Worlds Slayer creatures. Why not just hand that out for free every so often from, you know, the mid to high level Slayer masters? You know, go clear X amount of worlds at certain difficulty on Shattered Worlds, and hey, you can get some Slayer XP from it. Like, why not pass that out as an assignment?
That may be coming. We don't know yet.
But you can purchase that right now in Shattered Worlds, so I don't think they would hand that out.
That. You don't think they could possibly add that with the expansion of Slayer?
I don't know if the creatures in here are difficult enough at the mid to lower levels, right?
But, well, not at the lower levels, but we're talking about a 120 expansion. Once you get up to, like, around 75, it gets tough. And the challenge, we never even mentioned a challenge mode, Shane. Oh no, how did we overlook that?
Right.
Yeah, because the gold challenge is, it can be difficult with those bombs going off.
Right, so there is a challenge mode where you can say, I want to go into, just clear a few worlds, and here's a very hard set of creatures, and you get some extra rewards from it. So there is that as well.
Yeah, I totally spaced that. Oops.
Right. But I wonder how many people are doing that. I don't know.
I only know of a few. I had, someone had told me yesterday that the difficulty curve is rather steep between the different levels. So like the silver, there's a pretty steep curve from that to the gold. So,
all right.
Yeah.
And as for time, I completely agree with Sirion here that it should have been a smaller time investment. 30 to 60 minutes would have been good. And, this also comes from where my Slayer idea came from, is that if you're on a Slayer task in Shattered Worlds, you are there only for a certain number of kills. So it's not going to be that much of a time commitment.
Yeah, and I agree with the time issue. Now, for me, a lot of that time issue comes from, okay, I love the way it looks. I wouldn't want them to change that at all. But I end up doing a lot of backtracking and a lot of running from this point over here to now you have to run over to this mob over here, because they can be kind of spread out. And it wastes a lot of time doing that. Luckily for me, have you noticed that there is a trail? So if you only have a few left or you don't know where the portal is, you can follow that trail back. Which is good, because otherwise I would really be wasting time just wandering around there. But maybe if they were grouped a little closer together, it would save some time.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right. And the next one is, of course, what we talked about, player attitude, or is it the rewards? Or should players not be required to invest anything in this event? I think if you had players not invest anything at all in this event, it would just become too lucrative for the amount of XP that it can give. So I think that there needs to be some form of investment, whether it's time or weapon drain or invention charge rate drain. That's got to be there. But at the same time, I think we need to be able to have an update that is focused on not rewards. So I'm going to say it's a 50-50 problem with the player's attitude and the fact that they're not, that the majority of the players are not seeing this for what it is, not because that they are blind or anything like that, but the fact that I think Jagex could have done a better job of promoting this as it came out as, you know, a basically a Dominion tower for PvE to see how good you are at killing things that are like Slayer creatures and eventually trending up towards mini bosses. And I think if they would have done that with a leaderboard, with maybe, like you said, Sirion, cosmetics and whatnot, I think that would have been a good way of getting people to play this without needing to have the amount of rewards and making rewards seem better than they are right now, because I think the rewards are good for this. They just need a leaderboard and the ability to bring people in here to compete, basically, as a PvE kind of Dominion Tower should be. So.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. There does have to look, you know, let's not forget this is a safe death too. And so you don't have, you know, it's not taking Onyx to charge a Ring of Death. If you're using that, you don't have to pay death, you know. It's safe in that way. So I tend to think that it is fair to have a drain rate or an equipment degrade. I've always been a proponent of that just in general of the game. I've always felt like if you can't afford to pay for the degrade cost, then you shouldn't have degrading equipment. It just, if you can't afford the packs and you don't want to make them yourself, don't augment your gear. Sorry. That's just, on the other hand, players have been conditioned to expect rewards. And if Jagex is doing an update like this, and its central theme is the combat, it's the Slayer, it's all the stuff that you described before, I think that's fine. But the reward is important. Now, if there was a really in-depth story behind it, if you were picking up lore drops as you cleared worlds, if you were learning more about the Shattered Worlds as you went through it, that would be more of a reward in of itself. And I wouldn't, and then I would fault the players. But I feel like it's not really their fault. They've been conditioned that way, and they didn't give us a lot on the other end to delve into. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's very true. Very true. And also to just make a note of Sirion's other point that they could have buffed people to max level and allow you to use only a special set of gear here. I think that would make a very interesting third mode for this Shattered Worlds mini game here. Because, I mean, how many times have people wanted to, you know, have max combat, but they can't get there? Right?
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that. I'm really on the fence because I love anything that's OP. Like, I love feeling like you're just awesome, but I don't know. I almost feel like in this situation it could go either way. Like it could be cool if it was max, but it could also be cool if you just scaled, if your player scaled to where you were. You know,
right,
and progression.
And, you know, maybe if you unlocked it after your first run through, or maybe half a run through of Shattered Worlds, that might be a good way of doing it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think what we have done here on this podcast is I think we built a great episode about what Shattered Worlds is, what it does good, what might need some adjustment, and where it can go in the future, which is ultimately, I think, a very positive place, you know, all things considered. And this update is by in no means bad, I don't think. I just think the players are expecting a little, things a little bit different reward-wise. So,
yep, I agree with that. And it's part of, you know, I mean, it's part of the culture right now. And that, you know, has its ebbs and flows, and it may not be like that always.
Yeah.
But it's a good update. I like it very much.
All right. What's your favorite type of bird?
Oh boy. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to have to go with fried chicken or, wait a minute, almost forgot, bald eagle, because I'm American.
Yeah, the American eagle is always something that comes to mind. It's a symbol of freedom and liberty, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. That's a good one. That's a very good one. I'm going to just have to go with something, I guess, like the sparrow then. I mean, unless you wanted to get like a parrot or a cockatoo or something. You know, back in World War II, Winston Churchill would have had a parrot. And that parrot was, after Winston Churchill died, was passed off. And this parrot would occasionally say very interesting things about the Germans. So...
Is that true?
Yeah, it's entirely true. It's entirely true.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't even know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I'm just going to have to go with the sparrow, because I don't think you could have a parrot that would last that long, cuz you know those guys live a long, long time.
Yes, very long.
80 to 100 years. So.
Yeah, very likely it will outlive its owner.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, but let's just say what it was saying about the Germans was very vocal and very profane things.
Oh, that's great.
Alrighty, if you guys want to send questions or discussion topics in, you can send them in starting on Mondays at update.rsbnb.com/ask. Or if you don't want to wait, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com or leave us a voicemail or text message at 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. Alrighty, on to tech news we go. So, you know, hackers and, you know, people related to TV shows and whatnot are always coming up in the scenes and whatnot. And the most recent leak was that hackers leaked Netflix's Orange is the New Black Season 5 on the Pirate Bay, of course. You know, you used to hear a bit about this in the past about TV shows being leaked, but when things start getting leaked from Netflix, you ultimately have to question what's going on there and realize that, oh, piracy happens, and even if Netflix wanted to prevent that, it's going to be a very, very hard thing to protect, because what actually happened here was that the software company that did the post-production of the TV show was hacked. And the video files for the new season were stolen. And even though a ransom was paid and agreed upon, the deadline was missed and the first episode was put online. So that's the story behind this. It didn't actually come from Netflix. It came from the post-production company that was handling the episode. So I should note before we get any further that Sirion provided the story to us also for tech news. I mean, when you think of piracy, you normally think of someone ripping it off of the TV or ripping it off of an online streaming service. You don't think of it coming from the main source of the actual production company, right? So
yeah, that's see, and I heard about the story earlier this week too. I forget where I was listening. Maybe it was Tech Tuesday, something like that, ETC. I didn't know they actually paid a ransom. I thought they didn't, and that's why they had leaked it. So,
well, Netflix didn't pay the ransom.
Okay.
But the other company did.
Oh, that's too bad, because it would have been so much funnier had no one cared that they ripped it off. That would have been hilarious. It's too bad that they got paid anything for that. At least it wasn't a hospital this time or something like that, because the same scams have been ran on those kinds of places.
And you know, that brings up a very interesting point here, is that not only is ransomware like this a problem, it's that this is the modern day hacking. And, you know, it can be that you get a virus on your system and it encrypts your entire hard drive, and you're forced to either pay ransom or start over when that happens. And, you know, the fact that this can happen to a movie studio, and Netflix is even involved in this, shows that security in the modern world isn't a black or white issue. It's not like, okay, now we're going to flip a button and we're going to be secure. No, no, no. It's actually going to be, okay, we need to see, are our practices secure? What rings of our security perimeter are not secure? Are our systems secure and whatnot? And, you know, it just really goes to show how convoluted modern security is, and how, you know, you and I could very well end up being targets, providing we're not taking the appropriate measures. And, you know, this kind of goes back to JAG, too, because, you know, RuneScape accounts have an inherent value with them, or at least they used to in the hacking circuit, because people could sell their GP and whatnot. Whereas, you know, with Authenticator, assuming you have that set up correctly, you just completely shut that right down. So I think the moral of the story here is that you need to take what you can get for security, and realize that security isn't a, you know, an on or off thing. It's something that you have to work towards. And if your practices aren't secure, well, then that causes problems. So, but yeah, all 10 episodes are now online after Netflix and the production company didn't pay the ransom. But,
and, you know, I heard something that was interesting. I don't know if this is true, but I've heard that because of the availability of streaming services like Netflix, that those torrent-type sites, piracy stuff, has really went down in the number of people that do it because of the availability. And when I heard that, I thought, well, yeah, that reminds me of Bonds. You know what I mean? Like, give people a legit way to do it for cheap. It's going to happen. So if that's true, I think it's great, because, you know, only a small percentage is actually watching it like that. The rest of us, you know, like our Netflix memberships and pay our monthly fee, and we're cool with that.
All right. And this was supposed to be released in June. So as you can see, that is a month ahead of the time. And of course, they haven't even probably started promotion on this yet. But anyways, next piece of tech news is Apple related. And Tim Cook this week announcing a $1 billion fund to promote U.S. manufacturing and job creation. So what they intend to do with this is, they say, quote, cause a ripple in the pond that would promote manufacturing job increases, and also stimulate the service industries that are around those manufacturing jobs. So there is no idea yet from Apple about who Apple is investing this $1 billion in, but Apple has already chosen which company they are going to invest in. And this money will actually go towards creating new manufacturing jobs in the U.S., which, as you guys will recall, has been a constant call for Apple, is to bring manufacturing of products back to the U.S. if at all possible. And, you know, it's not that there's no capability of doing that. It's just that the infrastructure doesn't exist and people aren't trained to do this. So I think the core story of this isn't necessarily the manufacturing jobs that are being promoted here, because, you know, that's all fine and dandy, right?
The manufacturing jobs. I mean, this is, This is a shock to me, actually. I hadn't heard about this story. It's good. I hope it does start a ripple. I wish it would have happened, not under this president, because I'm sure he had nothing to do with it. But he'll take credit for it. I almost feel like, do you think that Apple may have finally realized that it's fine to save money on labor on your manufacturing facilities in China, but they're never going to make enough money to buy your products.
Yeah.
Americans will.
And that is exactly my issue with Apple and all these countries or all these companies that they manufacture in China. And, it's capitalism. Like, that's because it's the cheapest place to go, right? But
Yeah.
what it amounts to is exploitation of that workforce there. I mean, if you look at the Foxconn factories where they build iPhones in China, they have suicide nets outside the windows, and they are structured like work camps there.
And on a moral stance, it's atrocious. But even from a, I mean, I'm not an economics guy, but even on a, on an economic front, I go, well, if people have money, they buy your stuff.
Exactly.
So
And
why would
people.
that's so short-sighted, you know?
Right, and people in China are taking these jobs because they are high-paying jobs, because they are from a U.S. company and it's a high-tech field, and it's a way to make a living in China. Which, I mean, you can't fault people for doing that, but at the same time, that is one of the biggest things that is overlooked when it comes to Apple products is where they're manufactured. And I think companies like Apple, Google, and Facebook all have a responsibility to do this kind of investment in the countries where their products are used, the US, Canada, and pretty much every other developed country. Because if you think about it, could you imagine the amount of positive press that could come from Apple if the iPhone was made in the US?
Oh, it would be great for them. I mean, and plus, it's just the bottom line. You're gonna sell more phones if people can buy them. They're just going to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a
Like
myth that people won't do those jobs. That is a myth. People will.
Yeah, they just need the proper stimulation. And that can come from tax reform, and it can also come from investment from Apple. Like, not to get into the politics side of this, but the US currently has a 35% plus tax rate, and if companies don't cut around that, they have no money, no incentive to bring that money back. Whereas conversely in Canada, we have a 15% corporate tax rate compared to yours in the US. So there's some stuff going on there on the business side of the government, but companies like this also need an incentive to do this. And I think with Apple doing this, much like we talked about a few weeks ago, also with their green initiatives, they're setting statements that, yeah, we can do things, we can do great things, and we don't need the government to force us to do it, which is ultimately how it should be. And I would absolutely love to buy an iPhone or a Mac that was completely made in the US. From the glass to the casing to the assembly all the way down to the chip, that would be excellent, I think. And I don't think we're there yet, but I think that would be a great thing for Apple to ultimately aim for. So it's not the fact that, okay, we're going to create a bunch of jobs around manufacturing here. Yes, that's good and everything, but it's the message that this sends that we're doing this, and every other company like Google and Facebook could also do this. Because if you look at Google and you look at Facebook and you look at that entire San Francisco Bay Area and Silicon Valley, people who live in San Francisco are being priced out of the housing market. People who have lived there for multiple generations are being priced out of the housing market because these companies, Google, Facebook, and all the other high-tech companies, are bringing in these amount of people or this high amount of people to work in their companies. And they, of course, want to live in San Francisco because it's a nice place. But at the end of the day, all these people coming in and the amount of high wages they earn raises the prices of San Francisco for everyone and the housing prices. I'm just using that city as an example here. And, there's no reason why companies like Google and Facebook can't do more to offset that. And there's no reason why someone who has lived in San Francisco for two or three generations should be at risk of being priced out of their own city because of a company like Google or Facebook.
And this is not a new concept. Henry Ford figured this out 100 years ago. Now, how it's been forgotten, it's beyond me.
It's been forgotten because manufacturing has shipped over to China and only high-tech stuff seems to draw the attention in the U.S. But
yeah,
tell your Henry Ford story. I think I know where you're going with this.
Well, it was important to him. He paid people a very decent, a high wage for the time because he wanted his employees to be able to afford and buy his cars, which made sense because he sold more cars. All his employees could buy them. That's what I mean. That's to me, that's looking long term versus the short term kind of cash grab.
But yeah, totally agree with that. And hopefully this will be the kick in the pants that other companies need. So I'm really happy that Apple's done this.
And how cool is it that Apple is doing it? I mean, you know, the innovators, the company that kind of, you know, started it all. I'm glad to see it. I'm glad it's them that's doing it.
Indeed. And see, that's the thing that makes me happy to buy Apple products, you know, despite all the other questionable things that they might do. So, all right. Moving on over to Microsoft now. Yes, it's not just going to be a 100% chat about Apple here on Tech News, but Microsoft has unveiled a $990 laptop, calling it the Surface laptop, running something called Windows 10S. This is marketed at the education market, surprisingly, for $999, which is kind of expensive when you're talking about a school or maybe someone just starting out for the first time who might be more used to a $300 or $500 laptop price. But this Surface laptop, of course, is a traditional clamshell laptop. It does, I think, have touch as well, which, I mean, you would come to expect with the Surface terminology and namesake, right?
Yeah. And it have you seen it yet, Shane?
Yeah. Yeah. What about it?
I think it looks really slick.
Yeah, it's a touchscreen.
Yeah, I've just seen the pictures, and I can't use a laptop really personally, but I thought it looked pretty good. And this is a direct competitor, right, to the MacBook. Same kind of like price range, but how is it in its performance? Does it stack up against a MacBook?
Well, we don't know yet because the review units haven't gone out and we don't have benchmarks on that. But there is one huge caveat with this laptop right now, and that is that it's running Windows 10S, which means that you are inherently locked to a Microsoft-like tablet experience in that you can't change your default web browser. You can only use apps from the Windows 10 App Store, meaning you can't download an app from the internet and use it. Like, for example, you couldn't download, 7-Zip, for example, unless it was in the Windows App Store. So that is the number one clinching point of this. And, you know, I don't think that that's going to be a huge issue because eventually Microsoft will find a way to get the price down on this and bring it down to a Chromebook-like price of around $500 to $600 probably. And then they will have a different version that runs a standard vanilla version of Windows 10 later on that occupies this $999 price point and can do everything you would expect a normal laptop to do. And then we're talking about competition between the MacBooks because then you can actually run RuneScape on it, for example. You can run pretty much everything that's not in the Windows 10 store. So with that being said, I think that this is a field test more for the form factor and idea than anything else, because Microsoft really hasn't done a product like this before that wasn't the Surface. The Surface, of course, was touch first, whereas this is keyboard first. So this will appeal to the more traditional audience, of course. But at the end of the day, I think this is a great strategy for Microsoft because it gets them into that notebook PC hardware market that they have been absent from for all these years that Apple has controlled so well. And then you had the crapware that comes from Dell and HP and others, right?
Yeah,
all that software pretty much. Comes installed. So the question will then become later on, why would you buy something from Dell if it's going to have crapware on it, and you can just get this all-in-one, ready-to-go, perfect experience from Microsoft. And I think that's what they're going for with this. And eventually they will remove the S from Windows 10 here and run it with a standard version of Windows 10. But
yeah, and I mean, at this point, I had heard that it was running that 10S. I didn't know that that's what it meant, that you could only use apps. So that's quite a drawback, I think.
Yeah, it's basically another kick at the can of Windows 8 RT, which ran on the Surface, and that was called Windows 8 Real Touch, and it was the same limitation. You can only run apps from the App Store and whatnot. Of course, the positive side of this is that rather than running an ARM processor, this is running a chip from Intel, which means it could, in theory, be compatible with all the other applications that your system has.
Okay, so
it's
the potential is there.
The potential is there. It's just software limited at this point.
Okay.
Yep.
That makes sense.
And then, oh, okay. I see. Oh, okay. And then you can get a free switch to Windows 10 Pro by the end of 2017 if you decide to purchase. All right, that makes sense. So you can install Windows 10 Pro and upgrade to it on here.
Oh, okay.
So that basically means that you can get a full Windows 10 laptop now for $999.
That sounds pretty good.
And a free update, and then you're competing with the MacBooks of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And I think this would be, with the market that they're looking for, they may make some inroads, because it would be a little bit cheaper than the MacBooks, right? And it has the added bonus of, I don't know when the last time was, like, you was on a college campus, and I don't know what they're like in Canada, but when I was there, a lot of our, all of our computer labs, I mean, there's like, you might find one Mac, maybe. So this would be a lot better if you were using your laptop and you have to send it to the printer or whatever that.
It's just, and, a lot of people these days use Mac laptops on the college campuses. So this is going to be very interesting to see if people pick one of these up. Though, with that being said, they do have the limitation of running Intel integrated graphics, so you are going to be limited for your gaming perspective. But I think at this point, anything can run RuneScape, right?
Yeah, pretty much. that they made sure of that.
All right. Well, that's going to be very interesting. If anyone out there ends up picking one of these up, let us know. Alrighty. Well, are you ready to move on to our Skill of the Month update for May?
Let's hear how everyone's doing.
Yes.
For
so,
four competitors?
No, five, we actually got more this time. We do have five. We do have four with XP, but we do have seven people who entered. One of which can't get XP because they have 200 million XP already in the skill. But
oh, rough, harsh.
Yes. Harsh. So it's the cooking skill of the month, and Adiron Cronon, aka Touchpad Pro, has gained 17.7 million cooking XP thus far in 4 days.
In 4 days?
Yeah.
And I thought I was good. Wow. Wow, and I have won two different cooking competitions in my clan, and never... Well, I mean, I got close to that, but that was a week. That was a week. Wow. Nice job.
Meanwhile, Parnassus is in second place with 1.7 million experience gained, and Flash is in third place with 496,000 experience gained. So definitely gaining lots of experience here, I think.
Oh, wow. And double XP is coming. This is going to be crazy.
All right. All right. It's up for someone to try and catch Touchpad Pro here. I don't know if that'll be possible, but...
Good luck. Good luck.
Anywho.
That's cool.
And
Shane, how do people sign up for that?
Well, at the end of the month, the last week of the month, you can head on over to rsbnb.com/skotm, and you'll get a sign-up form where you can sign up for the next skill, and the skills are chosen randomly, so unfortunately we don't know what the June skill will be, but we will definitely let you guys know when it's time to sign up.
Oh, very good.
All right, so we do have some achievements of the week here. good number of them, so I will run through these right now. Starting on May 3rd, just yesterday, Pokemama 1 got 99 agility. Moving on to the 2nd, we have Eidfend with 99 thieving, Pokemama again with 99 fishing, Grimy Tossels with 99 magic, Pokemama again with 99 ranged and 99 thieving. On May 1st, we have Thaxi with 99 strength, Grimy Tossels with 99 prayer, Thaxi again with 99 invention, Diapolo 10 with 99 slayer, Roar Bob with 99 farming, congratulations. Moving on to April 30th, we have Wolfie with 99 hunter, CID Reigns with 99 agility, Razory with 99 farming, another 99 farming. On the 29th, we have Diapolo again with 99 divination. Seraphiro got both 99 agility and 99 divination. Diapolo again on the 28th with 99 thieving, 99 dungeoneering, and 99 mining. And Brappa got 120 invention also on the 28th. And then finally on the 27th, we have Warrock with 99 defense, Diapolo with 99 farming and 99 fishing, Elkenna with 99 woodcutting, Warrock with 99 strength, and Grimy Tossels with 99 hunter, all on April 27th. Congratulations, everyone, on those achievements. That's a huge list right there.
Yeah, wow, there must have been something in the air last week or this week, right? I mean, wow, that's a good job, everybody. It's great to see the 99s coming in like that. Wow, very cool.
Indeed. All right, so we do have the Informer Roundup for April, which is, of course, a collection of all the various Informer articles that we had for that month. We, of course, had your article that month, Tanis, on the achievement system, which you said many people were left scratching their heads. Mr. Bistro talked about Gemstone Dragons, and Alex talked about the Spring Fair. Well, I talked about TV and the current state of it and how it can be improved going into the future and why it should be improved. So you can find all that and more at informer.rsbnb.com or get the link to the roundup in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com.
That was, I just want to commend you on that article, Shane, because it was so timely for me, because we're actually in the process of looking at what we are going to be buying streaming service wise versus getting rid of our cable. So right. It was a great read.
Yeah. I was focused mainly on the hardware and getting a box that would do everything, whereas the streaming services can be put in with an app. So I'm going to actually, in the month of May, be looking at the actual hardware that's available now to see what you can purchase to see if we can get anywhere near that level of ubiquity to get a single TV streaming device. And I can already tell you two of the devices that are going to appear on that list are going to be the Apple TV and the Xbox One.
We are actually looking at Apple TV, so very cool. Yeah. Very, very cool.
All right. I believe you have a pick of the week.
I do. Do you know what today is, Shane?
It is May the 4th.
Exactly. Do you know what that is?
I don't know. Why don't you just tell me?
It's Star Wars Holiday. May the 4th be with you. So to all the Star Wars fans out there, I'm happy to let you know that Steam has many of its Star Wars games, an extensive library, for anywhere from 50 to 80% off. For an example, I was able to pick up a bunch of the older games that I really missed from when I was a teenager. I mean, we're talking back in the 90s. So I was able to literally pick up 13 different games for about $20. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty good. And if you would like to know more about the history of Star Wars games, I just put out an article today. So it kind of goes over and celebrates the history with Star Wars games and kind of why I'm so passionate about that. So yeah, there you go.
Nicely done. Yeah, and lots of great pictures, too. I want to commend you on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice pictures here. But yeah, you can find that in farmer.rsvb.com. How many games did you go through in here? I think it was a good number of them, eh?
Yeah, and it was a fraction.
It was all through the history as well.
Yeah, I tried to pick games that were special to me, you know, throughout the different different time periods. And I've been gaming for a really long time. So I've kind of been here and witnessed all this firsthand. But I couldn't do an extensive history because their catalog is just, it's too big. Well over 100 games. In fact, I lost my count. I was trying to count the actual number of games, and I lost count somewhere around like 120. So I'm just going with well over 100.
Wow.
And yeah, so but in the article I touch on at least two or three per decade, essentially, really stood out, to me. And I've been streaming different Star Wars games all week, and I'll be doing that later after the, well, you guys will not know this, but by the time this comes out, I'll be streaming something different. But yeah, I've been doing Star Wars week. I'm doing that a little bit later tonight. So yeah.
Nicely done. All right. Well, I guess then I can ask you what you've been up to on RS this week.
Shattered Worlds, man. Shattered Worlds. When I could, like I said, I've been, focused on Star Wars related content this week. But I took when Shadow Worlds came out Tuesday, I basically parked myself there and have stayed there. I've made it to about World 40. Just now started to take a little damage, but I'm still working on my first inventory of Rocktails. I went through one Holy Overload, I think.
Oh, it's not too bad.
So, no. I hear that that's going to change around level 75. It's going to start to get a lot tougher. And the higher you go up, the tougher it's going to get. And not just the monsters, but the environment and the mutators get a lot rougher as well. So, that's what I've been doing in RS. Before, the prior couple weeks, I've been actually forced to use the achievement system, and I had been clearing a couple different task sets. So I cleared Karamja, Prif, and what else? Another one. I'm
Desert.
Working on Mortania right now. No, that was going to be last.
Oh, yeah. Everyone stays away from that one, right?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, that sounds good. As for me this week on RS, I have been, of course, getting ready for Double XP weekend, and this time I will not forget to farm the secondaries. I forgot that last time.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah, I forgot to farm the secondary ingredients, and, that didn't go over too well, but...
Probably got expensive, right?
Yeah, it did. It did. It really did. And, for that reason, that's why I'm getting started early with as much notice as I can have. And, aside from that, just herbs. I bought 100 of each herb seed that I didn't have in my bank so I can get those ready to go. And that'll give me anywhere between 700 and 1,200 of each herb to work with.
Oh, very, very nice. Very nice. Are you going for 120?
Yes, 120 herb blower. That's been a constant challenge trying to find ways to do that without breaking the bank. I got herbs down no problem. It's just a question of finding secondaries. If I could find a reliable source of bird's nests, that would be great. But you know how rare those are when you're woodcutting and then you can only fight the ice strike worms, on Slayer task and once a day with the mask and whatnot. So it's a little bit hard to get bird's nests.
Do you use your kingdom?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Armadillo would be another maybe possible way. But,
yeah, potentially. Yeah. But, the problem with the kingdom is that, you only get about 100 every 2 weeks or so, which, that's gone in a few inventories. So.
Yeah, that's right.
But aside from that, I've been Ark Island hopping still. I've found a decent island with golden bamboo and the fish, Wobgong fish on it. That's what I wanted, but I forgot to bring a flag.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh no. Oh.
Because I am wanting to use that for my invention leveling up, but forgot a flag, so.
Oh, that's a bummer. Darn. Yeah.
I wish there was a constant supply of flags that I could put in my inventory or something, but it's the Ark. We know how we all feel about the Ark here.
Yes, we do.
But anyways, I believe that's enough for this week's episode of RSBNB Update, unless you have anything else.
I do not.
Alrighty then, we will see you all next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Thank you for sharing your time with us.
Bye-bye.